It is Monday, the 18th of February. Let's begin together in prayer in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Teach us to do your will, O Lord. At home and at work, open our eyes to the demands of your love. In business and pleasure, grant us the wisdom to choose you as you would have us choose. In making decisions for the unborn, the aging, the dying, strengthen us to choose life. O Lord our God, you have replanted on our earth the garden lost in Eden, and you have sent a new gardener to till the soil plowed by the wood of the cross. He who is both the farmer and the seed has watered the earth with his life's blood, shed for our redemption. Make us grow into his likeness by the power of his word dwelling in our hearts. All glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, is now, and ever shall be, world without end. Amen. It is a better way to start a Monday morning, the Sunrise Morning Show, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matt Swaim. Anna Mitchell's got news. She's just back fresh from the Columbus Catholic Women's Conference, and will give us an update on that. Paul Lachman is behind the controls up this hour. Kevin Schmiesing will be along to take a look at this week in Catholic history, including the first Mass on the continent of Antarctica. You didn't know that was a thing. It's a thing. Monsignor Charles Pope will talk about the rite of churching of women after childbirth. It's not dissimilar to what Mary did after she had Jesus. Dr. Matthew Bunsen will be along to talk about the news over the weekend of former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick being laicized by the Vatican. And Bear Wozniak will talk about a time when St. Paul got kicked out of the temple. So, an exciting hour. Hope you can stay with us. Right now, it's 2 minutes past. Here's Anna Mitchell with news.
Good morning. As Matt just stated, Theodore McCarrick has been laicized by Pope Francis. The former Washington Archbishop can now no longer present himself as a Catholic priest. Vatican spokesman Alessandro Gisotti read from the official church decree on Saturday.
Solicitation in the sacrament of confessions and sins against the sixth commandment with minors and with adults. The Congresso imposed on him the penalty of dismissal from the clerical state.
Gisotti said McCarrick was notified of the decision on Friday.
The Holy Father has recognized the definitive nature of this decision made in accord with law, rendering it a res judicata, that is, admitting of no further recourse.
The 88-year-old McCarrick resigned last summer amid sexual misconduct allegations. The punishment handed down by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith makes him the highest-ranking leader to be defrocked in modern times. The action comes just days ahead of the major international summit on the Vatican on the protection of minors in the Church. In fact, a press conference is now underway this morning to brief reporters on this global meeting on sexual abuse, which begins on Thursday at the Vatican. Pope Francis looked ahead to this meeting during his Angelus address yesterday. From Vatican Radio, Lydia O'Kane has more.
The Pope said that all the presidents of all the episcopal conferences would be there, and he invited those present in St. Peter's Square to pray for the meeting, which the pontiff said he wanted as an act of strong pastoral responsibility in the face of an urgent challenge of our time. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
The summit will be held at the Vatican in the coming days to discuss the protection of minors in the Church. In addition to the presidents of all the bishops' conferences from around the world, the heads of Eastern Catholic churches, the heads of major Vatican offices, and the leaders of religious orders are expected to attend as well. Pope Francis, back in January, tried to tamp down expectations for the summit, saying the problem of abuse will continue and that it's a human problem. In other news, Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan says military planners are reviewing funding to see where funding can be diverted to build part of a wall along the border with Mexico. He said on Saturday that officials will use their best judgment when declaring which projects will see cuts.
All of this money has been assigned for other purposes, so it really then comes down to what are you going to trade off? And there's, when you say trade off, it really is a trade off. There is, you know, something that wouldn't be done that had planned to be done.
President Trump on Friday. declared a national emergency to find funds for the wall without congressional approval. Legally, Shanahan must declare the wall a military necessity before Defense Department construction money can be used. Shanahan is expected to meet with the secretaries of each military branch to find where $3.6 billion can be found in the construction budget. Another $2.5 billion is expected to come out of a Defense Department drug interdiction fund. Florida Senator Marco Rubio says there will be severe consequences if Venezuela's president moves against the country's opposition leader. The Florida Republican was at Colombia's border with Venezuela yesterday, where Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is refusing to allow humanitarian supplies into the country. Rubio would not say whether he would support U.S. military action against Venezuela. And Denny Hamlin has won the 61st running of the Daytona 500. Hamlin beat out teammate Kyle Busch for his second career victory in the Great American Race. Eric Jones finished third to give Joe Gibbs Racing the top three spots. Joey Logano and Michael McDowell rounded out the top five. Of course, I'm burying the lead of that story because, what, there were two or three major crashes in the last 10 wow. rounds of that. It was insane. I saw the last 10 laps.
I missed the whole thing. It's a tragedy because I was on airplanes all day yesterday, and at one point I was in Charlotte, which is like a NASCAR capital.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see any of it.
Wow.
Just because I'm in airports all day.
I'm sorry.
And I like the Daytona.
You like the Daytona 500.
I do.
Yeah, the last 10 laps were pretty intense. It took quite a while for them
congratulations
to
Joe Gibbs.
Up. Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if there's any precedent for a guy who's had that much success in two different sports.
It's pretty impressive.
I mean, besides Bo Jackson. I mean, on the coaching side.
On the coaching side, yeah.
Well, at any rate.
Well, how many people have, football and NASCAR?
Well, I know a lot of people who have them on their presets.
Well, no. I mean, who goes from football to NASCAR? He might be the first.
Paul Lachman, our sports reporter during our local hours of the show, is going to be doing some digging. He's going to do your stat of the day here pretty soon.
It's
7 minutes past the hour. Thank you for being with us on a Monday morning, Monday of the sixth week of Ordinary Time. Each week, we like to take a look at This Week in Catholic History with Kevin Schmiesing from the Athenaeum of Ohio and the Acton Institute. Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, Matt. Good morning.
So let's talk about the dedication of a church in Baltimore.
It was the first African-American Catholic church in the United States, St. Francis Xavier in Baltimore, dedicated this week in 1864. In the early 1790s, there was violent revolution in the French colony of Haiti, and many refugees left and came to the United States. They were both refugees of French descent and also of African descent, and many of the Africans settled in Baltimore. They were French-speaking, and they were Catholic, and there happened to be in Baltimore some French Sulpician priests who were running the seminary there. So this group of black Catholics began worshiping in the basement of St. Mary's Seminary in Baltimore. Remember, this is a period in American history when in most of the United States, and certainly in Maryland, blacks and whites would not worship together on Sunday, and this was true also within Catholicism. And so over the ensuing decades, this group of black Catholics would worship in various basements of churches throughout the city of Baltimore. In 1828, this community gave rise to the first group of black Catholic nuns, the Oblate Sisters of Providence. That's an episode we've talked about before. Finally, in 1863, they bought their own property. They purchased a building. At that point, they were being served by Jesuit priests, and so they dedicated their church to St. Francis Xavier. It was February 21st, 1864. Later on, the parish would be given over to Josephite priests. It remains a functioning parish to this day. Predominantly African-American, St. Francis Xavier in Baltimore, dedicated this week in 1864.
And Kevin, I know we don't talk a lot about Antarctic Catholic history just because not a lot of parishes down there, but we got a piece this week.
Yeah, I guess you could call this extreme Catholicism, the practice of the faith in the coldest place on earth, Antarctica, and the first Catholic Mass was said there this week in 1946. Exploration of Antarctica began in the early 19th century, but it was only in 1898 when the British established the first permanent research station there. During the 1940s, activity really picked up, in part due to World War II, and many other countries established presences there. It still has a very international flavor to it. Among the countries that were active there were Argentina and Chile, the nearby nations of South America. Many Catholics, of course, among the researchers from those countries. It was Father Felipe Lérida, who was a Spanish-born Jesuit working in Argentina, who offered the first Catholic Mass that we know of, February 20th, 1946. That was on one of the South Orkney Islands off the coast of the mainland of Antarctica. Just a short time later, an American priest working as a U.S. Navy chaplain said the first Mass on the mainland itself. There are today, well, it fluctuates between about 1,000 and 5,000 residents depending on the season, the time of year. The Diocese of Punta Arenas in Chile, which is the southernmost Catholic diocese in the world, has ecclesiastical jurisdiction over Antarctica. There are actually no canonical parishes in Antarctica, but there are a number of Catholic chapels. Among them, there's Notre Dame des Vents, which is Our Lady of the Winds, which was established by the French. There's San Francisco de Assisi, established by Argentina, and Argentina also sponsors what I think must be the most unusual chapel in Antarctica, if not in the world. It's called the Ice Cave Chapel. It's made entirely of ice. It's the southernmost Christian church in the world. It's essentially a tunnel dug underneath the ice, but they hold Mass there. And on at least one occasion that I know of, they had a wedding between a Chilean researcher and a Russian researcher. That was back in the early 2000s. So Catholic life goes on, even in Antarctica. The first Mass there this week in 1946.
Yeah, next time I'm down there, I'll have to check out some of those chapels.
Indeed.
Kevin Schmiesing, always great to take a look at this week in Catholic history with you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, as we check on weather for the nation, which is not completely Antarctic, periods of moderate to heavy rain will come to an end in the Tennessee Valley, deep south and mid-Atlantic by midday. A wintry mess of snow, sleet, freezing rain, and ice will likely continue throughout the northeast into the afternoon and evening. Strong northwesterly winds. Northwesterly winds, ushering in colder air behind a low-pressure system, could bring some light snow showers across the northern plains into the Midwest, Great Lakes, and the upper Ohio Valley in the morning. Another weather system will be settled over the Rockies for the end of the long weekend, creating the chance for snow in the southern Rockies into the central plains. Generally, small snow accumulations are anticipated for lower elevations. Rain jackets and umbrellas could be needed in Southern California and the extreme southwest, along with the extreme southern plains and lower Mississippi Valley. Up next, Anna Mitchell's back from the Columbus Catholic Women's Conference over the weekend. We'll check in with her, plus headlines. It's 13 past. I'm Matt Swaim, grateful that Visiting Angels underwrites the Sunrise Morning Show. People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide to continue living at home rather than a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework, and services are provided up to 24 hours per day with caregiver selection before service begins. Visiting Angels, online at visitingangels.com. That's visitingangels.com.
Catholic Singles is proud to support the Sunrise Morning Show. If you're looking for someone who shares your faith and values, Catholic Singles is a great resource for bringing single Catholics together, like Matt and Christine, who married a little over a year ago and have happily welcomed their first child. Founded by a Catholic single like yourself, Catholic Singles is committed to your needs as a Catholic by matching you with authentic Catholic principles, resources, and modern dating technologies. Let Catholic Singles help you find the perfect match on the web at catholicsingles.com/sunrise.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 855-25-SHARE. That's 855-25-SHARE, 855-25-SHARE.
If you're currently an EWTN media missionary or just interested in becoming one, we've got some great news. EWTN Media Missionaries has a new and improved website. EWTNmissionaries.com, designed with you in mind. Our new site is loaded with great features and it's easy to navigate. There are so many different ways that you can help EWTN. Join us in sharing the eternal word with the world. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today.
You know, if you are one of those media missionaries, you could be like, you know, I always set my alarm clock in the morning to this great show. I wake up to it. It's got this lady named Anna Mitchell who does headlines.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. Theodore McCarrick has been laicized by Pope Francis. The announcement came down from the Vatican on Saturday. A press conference is underway this morning to brief reporters on the global meeting on sexual abuse, which begins on Thursday at the Vatican. And organizers are preparing hundreds of protests for this President's Day over a declaration of a national emergency along the border with Mexico.
Full news coming up at half past the hour. And Anna Mitchell, just one note in relation to that meeting. I mentioned I was in airports all day. As I was getting on my first plane, I ran into actually one of our American bishops in the airport.
Oh, wow.
And he was on his way to something else. I didn't even tell him who I was or stop him for anything other than to say, just, we're praying for you guys.
Yeah. We most definitely need to be praying for them.
I would encourage everybody not to pray that, you know, anything other than God's will be done here, mm-hmm. Just because this is such a mess and there's so much heartache and sin and scandal and, yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that we as Americans need to be thinking about, especially in light of the Theodore McCarrick incident, if you can call it that, for lack of a better word, is that, so, you know, they've been saying in the news that, you know, Pope Francis and others have been seeking to kind of tamp down expectations. So we in the United States, I think, are much further along than quite a few other countries in the world as it pertains to addressing this scourge of sexual abuse.
And even we still have a long
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, you'll be hearing some sound bites in my news at the bottom of the hour from this press conference that's happening right now at the Vatican talking about this. You know, there are some countries that still need to get to a point, leaders of the church in some countries that still need to get to a point where they'll admit that this is even a problem.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, for us here in the United States especially, but for anyone who is faithful, that's scary.
That is very scary.
So we need to
definitely... That's why we got to do this as a whole church.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's why we need to be praying for it.
The particularities are going to be different in country to country as to how things are applied, but this is a crisis affecting the whole church.
Well, let's hope that once this global meeting is over, that the U.S. bishops who have, you know, kind of been reined in with what they've been trying to do in the wake of this McCarrick scandal, that they can actually move forward and really be a leader when it comes to not just protecting children, which of course should be our highest priority, but also keeping bishops accountable as well. So let's just keep praying that we can continue to move forward. As we know, a lot of things in the church happen at a snail's pace, for good reason in a lot of instances, but when it comes to something like this, we want it to be a little snappier, right?
Gotta act. That being said, we're going to talk a lot more about that with Dr. Matthew Bunsen here in a little bit, but you are recovering from the Columbus Catholic Women's Conference, which was
it looked like a marathon
of a day.
Success.
There was a lot of things going on. I will say this. I got lots of texts and emails and Twitter messages from people who said they saw you there.
Yes. And yes,
including
I had a
one
great
from,
time being the MC.
From Allison, who said that you're taller than she thought you were.
Yep.
And as I said, our station manager always says that Anna Mitchell is well over four feet tall. Well, yes. Over 4 feet.
You know, well, it was funny when I got there. It was just a few minutes before the conference was supposed to start, and I was talking to the folks who were kind of running things on the stage, and I said, should I go up there and make sure that they can see my face over this podium? Or am I going to need a step stool? But anyway, it was an incredible experience at the Columbus Catholic Women's Conference. They've asked me to come back next year, which I've already agreed to do. And Matt, you know what? You know who else was there, who I'm now like besties with?
Who's that?
Daria Little.
Oh, yeah.
She and I got to sit and talk for a good hour on Friday night at the dinner the night before the conference, and it was fabulous. She's incredible.
You know, I can actually talk to her again now because I finished Man in the High Castle over the weekend. And
nicely
she has,
done.
She did a whole, like, Catholic take on Man in the High Castle and a couple
she's
of other shows.
Awesome. So. She's awesome. So, great time had by all.
All right, cool. It's 21 past.
You rely on your car, so rely on the experts at Fort Mitchell Garage, a proud supporter of Sacred Heart Radio. They can do it all from brakes, tires, and heating and cooling to towing and collision repair and more. Fort Mitchell Garage on Dixie Highway in Park Hills. On the web at fortmitchellgarage.com.
Did you know that a car can feed a family, help pay their rent and utilities, or even get prescription medicine? When you donate your car to St. Vincent de Paul, it becomes a vehicle for hope and transforms lives for neighbors in need across Cincinnati. Please donate your car to St. Vincent de Paul Cincinnati. Your donation could be tax deductible. They handle all the paperwork and will even provide a tow at no cost. More information at 421-CARE or 421care.org.
When you need a landscaper, plumber, dentist, lawyer, realtor, doctor, insurance, or
a new car,
go to sacredheartradio.com and find the complete angel's list of underwriters. Let them know where you heard them, Sacred Heart Radio, and why you chose them. They share your faith and values because they will never know how much impact Sacred Heart Radio has on their business unless you tell them. And if you know someone who should be on the Angels list, email me their contact info, Leah@sacredheartradio.com, and I'll take it from there.
I'm Father Rob Jack. Join me this afternoon for Driving Home the Faith, when Chris Kaser will discuss the ethical issues around problem pregnancies. Angie Himeli of Catholic Charities will talk about ministry to senior citizens. I'll talk about God's creation of the human person, plus news, traffic, weather, and a whole lot more to get you home safely. That's this afternoon beginning at 4 on Sacred Heart Radio.
You're on the road to Christ the King. Driving home the faith.
Heart to heart.
Sunday mornings, you'll hear Good News Today with Father Jim Willig at a new time, 7:30 a.m. and then again at 9:30. Brought to you by Heart to Heart Ministries on Sacred Heart Radio.
Back with us now on the Sunrise Morning Show is Monsignor Charles Pope. You can read his blogs online at blog.adw.org and connect with him in general at monsignorpope.com. Good morning, Monsignor Pope.
Good morning.
So we're going to be talking about a traditional liturgy in the church called the Churching of Women. First of all, what is it?
It's a blessing for women who have been convalescing maybe for a while and are returning to church maybe after a few weeks, or biblically 40 days. We can talk about that in a minute. But to bless them, welcome them back, and bless them and express gratitude for their labor and giving us a new child for Christ.
Now, how is this related to the story and to the feast, really, of the presentation of Jesus?
Yeah, Mary and Joseph go up to the temple to fulfill two things. First of all, because Jesus is, quote, the firstborn, by which that's a technical term. Doesn't mean there are other children after, but the firstborn means the firstborn male child to any woman, whether she has other children or not. And there's a special obligation that that this child should be consecrated to the Lord. Every firstborn male, if you will, that opens the womb is consecrated in this way to the Lord. So after 40 days, there's to go to the temple and do this. Now, there's a second aspect that's going on there, too, that a woman, after giving birth, was to also, it says that she was ritually unclean. Now, be careful with that. A lot of people, hear the word quote, unclean, and they think there's something moral, or she's bad, or she's done something bad. That's the ritually unclean is a very careful concept. But a woman was to come and also then present something at the temple or a religious leader to be, if you will, purified from giving childbirth. And again, these words trouble us, I know, in the modern language, but ritual uncleanness is a liturgical concept, not a moral one. So
you're telling me that when a woman, if she decides to go through the churching of women, is not like sort of admitting that she's somehow impure because she's given birth?
Yeah, that is wholly absent from the church's prayers. What I was just telling you about ritual uncleanness was completely an Old Testament concept that was not carried over into this tradition in the Catholic Church. It's related to the 40 days after giving birth and so on. Isn't that a nice luxury to think about, Anna? They give women 40 days to convalesce. You know?
Yes.
Now they kick you to the curb one day after giving birth and send you home, and by gosh, you're up and around, and you expect to be back at work. And so there's a kind of a luxury in that, you know?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't mind myself, I got to admit, Monsignor.
That's right.
Well, actually, can you tell us a little bit more about this? Because even in the Old Testament, I think, there was a distinction here between ritual and moral impurity, right? What's the difference?
Well, you know, there was a sense in terms of ritual uncleanness and so on that they were very particular about who could celebrate sacred liturgies or participate in them. They didn't use the word liturgy, but you know, the sacred rites of the Jewish people. They were very particular because God was very holy, and there were certain things a number of things that could render a person unclean. Like, for example, that they came in contact with blood or what have you. There seems to be related to, interestingly enough, to a lot of bodily fluids and certain unclean foods and certain things like this, that contact with them rendered a person unclean, more we might say unfit to celebrate the sacred liturgies. This could happen to the priests and the men or the women, and this is just, there was just a sense of high reverence for God. Mm-hmm. I am going to engage in holy things, and I've been somehow touched by something that's of this world, and I need a period to be, if you will, come free of that, depending on the matter. It might be several days, a week, or it might be, in this case, 40 days, and so on. So, but again, it's a ritual aspect. It doesn't mean that someone has committed a sin or done something bad.
Sure, sure. So let's go back to the Catholic churching of women. Can you give us a sense of what happened during this ritual?
Yes, it's a very short and brief ritual, really. The priest meets the woman often at the door of the church, and she it's a very tender thing in a way. He hands her the end of his stole, and he leads her into the church, usually to a side altar or possibly the main altar, but more often than not, the Marian altar. Mm-hmm. And there he reads a prayer over her and says a few other quotes from the Psalms, and just simply gives thanks, welcomes her back, so to speak, and thanks God.
I would love to hear it. I mean, I've heard it twice before, because I've gone through this myself after the baptisms of both of my children, but I would love, for the benefit of the listeners, if you could read the blessing.
Yeah, and by the way, also the woman often carries a lit candle or is handed a lit candle by the priest.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just, all of these are just beautiful signs that you brought light, that you've brought a new life to our community. But anyway, here's the prayer. It's not too long. Almighty and ever-living God, who through the delivery of the Blessed Virgin Mary, thou hast turned into joy the pains of faithful childbirth, look faithfully upon this your handmaid, coming in gladness now to your temple to offer up her thanks, and grant that after this life, by the merit and intercession of the same Blessed Virgin Mary, she may merit to arrive together with her child to the joys of everlasting happiness through Christ our Lord.
Amen. And it is really a powerful experience to receive that blessing, to hear those words prayed over you. And I know this isn't part of the ritual, but my personal experience when I had my son about 2 years ago baptized, the priest prayed the blessing over me, the Churching of Women blessing, the ritual. And I was holding my son. I was kneeling at the altar, and then he took my son from me and took him up and laid him before the tabernacle to pray a prayer of offering him to our Blessed Mother. It was a really powerful moment.
Yeah, and I know that culturally that is sometimes added into it. It's not literally part of the rite, as you point out, but there are a lot of other cultural things. I mean, this is just it's a moment for joy and thanksgiving and dedication, and yeah, an awful lot of priests. Sometimes the parents bring the child up and put the child on the altar, the Mary altar. Yeah, there's a lot of different traditions, and it's beautiful. And the rite is so brief that sometimes people want to add to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. And this generally comes. I've only seen it after old rite baptisms, and I'd just like to give you an opportunity, Monsignor Pope, to promote parents using the old rite for baptizing their children.
Well, I would say the beautiful thing about the old rite is that it has all the exorcisms and other things like that. And with the music home, I don't have time to develop it. But obviously a child is baptized one way or the other, either way. But as St. Thomas says, we clear the ground, so to speak, before we plant the seed. You cleared it because this adds to the fruitfulness. And so there's the exorcisms, and there's so many beautiful things, meeting the stations. There's a lot of beautiful things that people should look into and ask to find out more about the older form.
I completely agree. Thank you so much, Monsignor Charles Pope. You can find him online at blog.adw.org. I'll just add my own one little piece of commentary that I think old rite baptism really shows the triumph of Jesus Christ over sin. Got to leave it there, because it's half past the hour. It's time for news. The president of the U.S. Bishops Conference has said the laicization of Theodore McCarrick is a clear sign that abuse will not be tolerated. The announcement came down on Saturday that Pope Francis had removed the 88-year-old McCarrick from the clerical state without the possibility of appeal. In response, Cardinal Daniel DiNardo released a statement in the wake of that announcement saying, quote, "No bishop, no matter how influential, is above the law of the church. For all those McCarrick abused, I pray this judgment will be one small step among many toward healing. For us bishops, it strengthens our resolve to hold ourselves accountable to the gospel of Jesus Christ. I am grateful to Pope Francis for the determined way he has led the church's response," end quote. A press conference is underway this morning to brief reporters on the global meeting on sexual abuse, which begins on Thursday at the Vatican. One of the organizers, Archbishop Charles Shikluna, considered the church's main prosecutor on the issue of sexual abuse, laid out the general agenda for the three-day meeting.
The 3 days will be dedicated, the first one to responsibility, the second to accountability, the third to transparency. These are values, these are important aspects of good government, of good stewardship, when it comes to prevention of abuse and safeguarding of our children. And it's also about making the church the safe place it should be.
During his Angelus address yesterday, the Pope looked ahead to the global meeting, calling child sexual abuse in the church an urgent challenge. He asked the faithful to pray for the upcoming summit and called it an act of pastoral responsibility in the face of an urgent challenge of our time. Also during his Angelus address yesterday, the Pope reflected on the Sunday Gospel of the Beatitudes, saying, "Jesus shakes us up and makes us recognize what really gives us joy and dignity." From Vatican Radio, Lydia O'Kane reports.
Pope Francis explained how Jesus declares the poor, the hungry, the afflicted, the persecuted, blessed.
Gesù dichiara beati i poveri, gli affamati, gli afflitti, i perseguitati.
While he admonishes those who are rich, well-fed, who laugh and are acclaimed by people. He went on to say that the "woe to you" phrase, addressed to those who are doing well today, serves to awaken them from the dangerous deception of selfishness and open them up to the logic of love while they still have time. The Pope emphasized that the passage of Sunday's Gospel, therefore, invites us to reflect on the profound meaning of having faith, which consists in trusting the Lord totally. He alone can give our existence that much desired fullness, yet one that is difficult to achieve. He noted that even today, there are many who propose themselves as dispensers of happiness.
Quelli che si propongano come dispensatori di felicità.
They promise success in the short term, Pope Francis said, great profits to be had, magical solutions to every problem, and so on. And without realizing it, here it is easy to slip into sin against the first commandment, idolatry. replacing God with an idol. That is why Jesus opens our eyes to reality, the Pope stressed. We are called to happiness, to be blessed, and we become so from now on in the measure in which we put ourselves on the side of God, of his kingdom, on the side of what is not ephemeral, but endures for eternal life. He continued, we are happy if we recognize ourselves as needy before God, and if like him and with him we are close to the poor, the afflicted, and the hungry. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
More than 250 protests are planned for this President's Day over the declaration of a national emergency along the southern border. The president, though, has defended his decision, saying he had to address a national security and humanitarian crisis. That's the news. It's 35 minutes past the hour. The
Schneller Heating, Air, and Plumbing is a proud supporter of Sacred Heart Radio. For repair, replacement, or maintenance of your home heating system, stay warm and comfortable during the coldest days this winter with Schneller. On the web at schnellerair.com.
If you're a metal fabricator or foundry using abrasives, burrs, and air tools, Tri-State Abrasive and Tool has a program to help you help Sacred Heart Radio when you use their services. More information at theabrasiveone.com with the number one.
Support for Sacred Heart Radio is from American Board Certified Orthodontist Dr. David Quast. Dr. David Quast's goal is to create not only beautiful smiles, but also great-looking faces. Dr. Quast combines the latest in digital technologies with a unique diagnostic approach that focuses on the harmonious alignment of the face, teeth, and jaws. Whether it's fixed braces, Invisalign, adults, or children, it's Quast Orthodontics in Crestview Hills, Kentucky. For a complimentary exam, 859-341-9400 or quastorthodontics.com to see beautiful smiles and faces.
It's 24 minutes before the hour on this Monday, February the 18th, and your forecast is brought to you on Sacred Heart Catholic Radio by SchnellerAir.com. You might need to scrape some glaze off your windshield this morning, and it will remain pretty cold today. Right now, temperatures in the lower to mid-30s as you're heading out the door. For this President's Day in Cincinnati, cloudy skies with an isolated chance for an afternoon wintry mix and a high today of 34 degrees. Partly cloudy tonight with an overnight low of 20. Partly cloudy tomorrow with clouds building in the afternoon and a high tomorrow of 37 degrees. For the Miami Valley-Dayton area, mix of clouds and sun today with a few flurries possible and a high of 34. Partly cloudy and cold tonight with an overnight low of 20. Partly cloudy again tomorrow with a high of 37 degrees. This is Sacred Heart Catholic Radio. It's 37 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to the Sunrise Morning Show on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Thank you for listening, and if you love listening to the Sunrise Morning Show, we could always use your support. You can do so by clicking the donate button at sonrisemorningshow.com or using our affiliate links to Amazon and Mystic Monk Coffee to do your shopping. Thank you so much. Dr. Matthew Bunsen is now with us on the Sunrise Morning Show. He's with the National Catholic Register and EWTN, also with Catholic Distance University. Dr. Bunsen, welcome back.
Good morning, and let me echo the appeal for donations. This is an important show that we all need to support.
Well, thank you so much for that. Very much appreciate the show of support there. Now, of course, news came down this weekend that Theodore McCarrick has been laicized by Pope Francis. First of all, from an official standpoint, what does that mean?
Well, what it means is that he can no longer function as a priest. Now, let's remember that sacramentally, Holy Orders brings an indelible mark, but as a cleric, he can no longer function in that way. So he cannot function publicly or privately. And that's a significant step, obviously, on the part of the Church to give some sense of the significance of it. First, this is almost essentially unprecedented that this would happen to a cardinal. But consider that just a year ago, he was Theodore Cardinal McCarrick, Archbishop Emeritus of Washington, D.C. Today, he is Mr. Theodore McCarrick.
Yeah. I mean, can you give us a sense of just how historic this is?
Certainly in the history of the Catholic Church in the United States, this is unprecedented. This is completely new territory. We have never seen, certainly in our lifetime, the fall of a figure of such prominence, of such influence. Theodore McCarrick, certainly in the early 2000s, and then again when he was sort of rehabilitated in the early years of the pontificate of Pope Francis, was, to put it bluntly, a high flyer. He was used for diplomatic missions. He wielded immense influence and appointments in the United States Catholic Church, and was known and respected in both ecclesiastical and secular circles, not just in the United States, but around the world. For him to fall in this fashion is truly unheard of, and the seismic dimensions of it we're still trying to grapple with as a church in the United States, and we're still also grappling with the fact that there are, as yet, many unanswered questions relating to his career and his fall.
Will we ever get those answers, do you think?
That's one of the difficult questions heading into the bishops' meeting last November. One of the pledges was that we would have as much transparency as possible. The Vatican itself pledged that it would release all of its findings, a resolution, of course, as you and I discussed back in November and have discussed since. The resolution was defeated at the bishops' meeting at the November meeting, and the resolution encouraged Pope Francis to release all the documents, not simply the findings. We'll have to see if pressure continues on the Holy See for that to happen. We need to know, for example, how it was possible for him to have climbed to such heights of power, but also to have remained in power, even though there were so many rumors and accusations swirling around him.
Now, let me ask you this about laicization in general. I mean, this means that the church no longer has any control over him, correct? Which, I mean, for an 88-year-old man, I guess that's not a huge concern. But in general, when a priest is laicized for something like this, the church can't control what he does or where he goes, can they?
Well, that's correct. And in some cases, over the years, we've had abusers who have been cut loose, and that has been a concern for a lot of people. Now, let's also remember that laicization is often requested by a priest, and that isn't always necessarily a penalty in the sense that we've seen, certainly in the last decades, men who have requested to be released from the clerical state. So that's one thing. In this case, the question is going to be, what is going to become his life? Where is he going to go? As you know, he's in Kansas at the moment. There are questions about whether he will have the financial means to survive. Catholic News Agency has a very interesting article on his potential financial state, and that's going to be the next question also that people are going to ask. Where, in the end of the day, is he going to end up living, and what kind of public profile will he have?
If any. Now, the first official on-the-record accusation of sexual abuse of a minor was leveled against McCarrick just this past summer, though, as you were saying, there were all kinds of rumors flying around for years about his sexual escapades. So though many of us, you know, said finally when this news of laicization of McCarrick came down, I mean, this actually happened quite quickly, didn't it?
By Vatican standards, at almost lightning pace.
Yeah.
In some cases, with the theologians, for example, who are under review for potentially heretical writings, that can drag out literally for years as the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith examines documents. In this case, the process for the accusations was known as an administrative process. Now, what that means is that if the preponderance of evidence is so high that you don't need the sort of traditional trial, you embark on an administrative process, which means that it's a streamlined one. Now, for the CDF, that tells you just the massive amount of information they had, the evidence that was there, and the clarity, I think, of the conclusions that they reached. Now, within that timeline, we know that the CDF concluded its work back in January, and then the appeal system kicked in. And I believe the term res judicata was invoked just a couple of weeks ago, last week, in fact, which basically means that once Pope Francis signed off on this, there was no appeal. Now, based on what we're hearing, Cardinal McCarrick, or former Cardinal McCarrick, actually did make an appeal, and that decision also took a little bit of time. So if we're thinking in terms of pace, this is even faster than one would think, because that conclusion was reached all the way back in January.
Wow. Now, I want to ask a question for the cynics, because I've seen this out there, Dr. Bunsen, and I think it should be addressed. Would this have happened at all, or at least would this have happened so quickly if it weren't for the outrage of everyday Catholics, basically forcing the American bishops to put pressure on the Vatican and on the Pope to do this?
That's an excellent hypothesis, an excellent question. What it tells me is that the level of interest in this case was such that certainly the American hierarchy had to pay very close attention to it. But I tend to look at this in a slightly more positive way, not necessarily less cynical, but certainly a more positive way. And that's this, that when the accusation became known back in the summer, certainly coming out of the Archdiocese of New York, which, to its credit, handled the accusations quite well and followed the book on them, as far as we're hearing, the U.S. hierarchy, especially the leadership of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, starting with Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, tried to move on this as swiftly as possible and to request from the Holy See swift action as well. So I think if we've learned one thing from the 2002 scandal going forward, it's that we have to deal with these crises quickly. We need to deal with them as transparently as possible. Now, cynics can understandably worry about some of the transparency that's followed, the pace of the Vatican's side on this, and, of course, how quickly the bishops are going to be able to implement norms for holding themselves accountable, because that's the great issue that has emerged out of this. And the disappointment, and I think, has fed the cynicism on the part of a lot of lay Catholics about will the bishops hold themselves accountable?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the final question here is, where do we go from here? I mean, we've got this finally happening, yet there's so much more to be done.
Yes. And this summit this week, and I know that you and I will be talking throughout the week while I'm in Rome covering the abuse summit. As you and I are chatting right now, there is a press conference at the Sala Stampa of the Holy See, or the press office, as the rollout commences for the abuse summit this week. The Vatican is dampening expectations for it, and we have to prepare ourselves for the fact that it is likely that nothing is going to happen substantively in terms of proposals being voted on and enacted until later this year, probably at the bishops' meeting in June, perhaps even as late as the bishops' meeting next November. So the process is unfolding, but it can at times be maddening, and we also don't know what sort of stories are going to break between now and then.
Well, Dr. Bunsen, we do very much look forward to having you on the show pretty much all week as we prepare for and then make sense of what's happening at the global meeting on sexual abuse that's taking place at the Vatican this week. And I'm sure you'll be covering it for the Register. Where can people find you?
NCRegister.com. I'll be writing something probably every day from the start of the summit on the 21st. And let's all pray for the Holy Father, the bishops, and all of the participants, and let's keep all of the victims in our prayers as well.
Yes, most definitely. Thank you so much, Dr. Bunsen. We'll be praying for safe travels as well for you as you head off to Rome. Thank you so much for getting up and being with us this morning.
God bless. Good to be with you.
All right, it's 13 till. We're back with Bear Wozniak right after this.
The Catholic solution to the healthcare problem is here. Solidarity HealthShare is a healthcare sharing ministry which provides an ethical way to fund healthcare costs while protecting and practicing our Catholic beliefs. Solidarity HealthShare's members are exempt from the fines and penalties in the Affordable Care Act. For more information, 844-313-4999, 844-313-4999, or online at solidarityhealthshare.org. solidarityhealthshare.org.
Support for the Sunrise Morning Show is from J.J. White Incorporated, the single-source multi-trade contractor for your next construction project. Since 1920, J.J. White Incorporated has been constructing with knowledge and providing service with integrity and safety. From heavy industrial to commercial projects, J.J. White does it all. With offices in Philadelphia, South Bend, Whiting, Newcastle, and Boston, you can count on excellent construction service and quality. J.J. White Incorporated, 215-722-1000, and online at jjwhiteinc.com.
More and more people are shopping at Amazon for their regular everyday items like paper towels, garbage bags, diapers, toilet paper, office supplies, and even groceries.
No matter what you plan to buy, don't forget to go first to sunrisemorningshow.com and click the Amazon link, because a portion of every purchase price comes back to to support us on the show.
Skip the line by going online and help the Sunrise Morning Show at the same time.
Don't forget, head to sonrisemorningshow.com and click the Amazon link.
That's sunrisemorningshow.com. Click Amazon.
Listeners to Catholic Radio, I think, benefit most, at least initially, from what I call remedial catechesis. What Catholic Radio does is it becomes an echo chamber for the teaching authority of the Catholic Church. And what we're doing is teaching many things which have been neglected over the last 40, 50 years. If you listen to Catholic Radio, you know what the Catholic Church teaches.
Al Cresta thinks Catholic Radio is important. So should you.
You know what that music means. We're joined now by Bear Wozniak on the Sunrise Morning Show. Bear, of course, is online at deepadventure.com. That's where you can find links to his television show, The Long Ride Home on EWTN, as well as his Facebook Live Catechism and Bible Studies, his books, and a lot more. Good morning, Bear.
Aloha from Hawaii. Yeah, good morning, Matt.
So we've been talking lots and lots about the life and ministry of St. Paul. And I got to tell you this, Bear, well, you know this as a father as well. I've had a kid disrupt Mass, but I never was like St. Paul and started a riot at the temple.
Yeah, we see here Paul going to the temple, and he's been going in and out, and he's taken some Gentiles with him who he'd brought with him, but never into the inner court, the holy place. He had just taken him into the court of the Gentiles, and now he's brought, at the bequest of the leaders in Jerusalem, four young men with him to pay their temple tax, because they'd taken a Nazarite vow, as had Paul. And there's a mob kind of fomented there, thinking that they had brought Gentiles into the holy place. There's three parts of the temple: the outer court, which is the Gentiles, court of the Gentiles, and there's the holy place, and then there's the Holy of Holies. So he had taken him into the holy place, which only Jews could go to, and there was this kind of mob mentality, which had been stirred up by the Pharisees. Those who had hired Paul to persecute the Jews now are wanting to persecute him themselves. And so it's kind of like this modern sort of social media frenzy, like the Me Too movement, the man is guilty until proven innocent, or these young men that were in D.C., attending the pro-life march, and then all this false stuff happens, and there's kind of this mob mentality today that we see. So he was caught up in that, and they were yelling, kill him, kill him, kill him, and they were sweeping him along to take him outside the temple to kill him. And Lysias, who's the commander there, the guard tower is just right there in the corner, right there, ready for, I guess, any problems. And they thought he might be this guy from Egypt who had been stirring up problems before, so they grab him and take him away. But the thing is the people that are mad at him because, Paul preached the gospel of grace, that we cooperate with God's grace in becoming like him and relationship with him. And they were more concerned about rules. Like the Muslims, for example, the Muslims are people of the book, all the rules. But as Christians, we're a people of the Word of God made flesh. We're a people of relationship. So that's the primary difference. And so this sort of mob mentality sprang up. And luckily, Lysias, the commander, was there to basically rescue Paul.
Yeah, there are a lot of things going on here, among other things. You know, the history of the early church, I think we take for granted because we've got 2,000 years of hindsight going here. But at the beginning, it's hard for the Romans to understand this. It's hard for the Jews to understand this. And it's hard for the Christians to figure out how to articulate this, that in some sense, this is a Jewish religion that has been completed. But in some sense, it's something completely separate and apart from the temple worship. So how are you supposed to put all these things together? And, of course the Holy Spirit has come to guide people into all truth, but you still got to work out the particulars a little bit. And St. Paul is kind of in the crosshairs of a lot of that. I mean, not just here, but in the Council of Jerusalem and in his rebuke of St. Peter and in his letters to the Corinthians about meat sacrifice to idols. You got to work out the particulars on some of these things.
Yeah, Paul, the early church, Rome was very tolerant of other religions as long as they had already existed before. And Jerusalem in particular, because the Jews had only one God, you know, so there was a very unique sort of, and a very exclusive religion. Like, it was very hard to become Jewish. You could become a God-fearer, but to actually become part of the Jewish community was very difficult to do. They're very exclusive. Now, suddenly, here's Paul and his definition of not having to follow the law, but to live by being saved by God's, you know, by God's grace, and then cooperating with God's grace. It opened up the door to everyone to come, and so there's this total need to define it. But it's kind of like, as Catholics, we can get caught up in that too. We can kind of live in the shallow end of the pool. I mean, there's some people are overly religious, doing all kinds of religious acts, and yet they don't spend time just having a relationship with Jesus. So we can spend yesterday I was out surfing. I got stuck in the boneyards after a wave, very shallow water with a lot of sharp coral, and my leash caught a coral head, and I went down. I was in the shallow end where I didn't belong. So Catholics belong in the deep, go out into the deep, and that just means, you know, yes, we have all these beautiful the Mass and confession and the novenas and all of these things, but our focus needs to not be on saying the rosary and getting through it. It needs to be on saying the rosary and enter into a relationship with the Lord, and going to Mass, not just to do the ritual, but to go to Mass to spend quiet time with the Lord and really build a personal relationship.
Yeah, this is such a crucial part of the Christian life. I mean, it's one thing to know all the technical things that you're supposed to do. It's another thing to live in the heart of Jesus, right? And those two things are not supposed to be mutually exclusive. It's just that in our human way of approaching things, we either isolate out all the ritual and liturgy that's meant to draw us close to Christ, or we isolate out the relationship and fixate on, you know, the technical stuff. It's supposed to be a both and. It's supposed to be, you know, we live in the heart of the church by following the rubrics that bring us closer to Christ, and it's all supposed to be there in one thing. And of course, Paul's trying to reconcile those things, but nearly gets him killed because not everybody wants to hear that. Not everybody's ready to figure out, you know, how grace is supposed to work in these situations. So, Bear, it's a fascinating look, as always, into the life of St. Paul. We'll talk to you more about it soon. And we've got deepadventure.com linked at sunrisemorningshow.com. Have a great day, my friend.
Aloha. You even got to use the word rubric, so that's pretty cool.
I did. You know, it's because my kid's working on a Rubik's Cube right now. Actually, I think that's something different. That's the Sunrise Morning Show. Thank you for being with us on a Monday. I'm Matt Sway. May God bless you and keep you and grant you his peace.